What's the deal going down? This your boy C. Griggs the Rogue, and welcome to another episode of the Rogue Radio.
Yay!
Alright, what's the deal? So, welcome to season 2. Season 2, episode 1 of the Rogue Radio. This season, hopes to be a bit more formatted and show a bit of growth for you guys. And I'm excited to bring some new content to you guys and some new topics and things. So we're not going to dilly or dally or run through any alleys. We're just going to jump right on in. U.S. is in a bit of a trade war with China, and that's affected some Chinese companies and tech as we know it. And that's a hot button topic that we'll be discussing. You got abortion going on. Harriet Tubman's in the news, if you can believe that. Steve Harvey losing jobs like left and right, and Kev on stage is in love with Houston. So we're gonna talk about a little bit of everything, and if you guys are ready, let's go ahead and get on into it. So the United States trade war with China has hit another bit of a big milestone, or whatever you want to call it. The latest to be affected by this is the alleged Huawei ban that's just been announced. And Huawei, the China-based tech company, is being affected in a pretty large way. Like I said, Huawei is a network, Chinese-based tech company that specializes in network equipment, computer, and most notably smartphones. They're also the number 2 largest by market share, next to Samsung and right above Apple, in company in the world. And this trade war is escalating rather quickly. They're pretty much banning Huawei from being used by any government agency already, in the midst of fear of being spied on by the Chinese government. And so that's already something that's already been put into practice and put into play. But they're taking things a step further by pretty much banning any dealings with Huawei. And Google was the first to react to that by suspending their services to any Huawei products. The new executive order has pretty much put Huawei on a proverbial blacklist, and that caused Google to snatch their license. And Huawei has now basically been given 90 days in an exemption that allows them to continue any updates that they can have to their products and things. But after that, if you own a Huawei phone, for instance, you will no longer get any updates or be able to use their services past that point. So that's gonna provide a bit of a jolt to the tech company and to the tech world. So much so, I mean, you think about it like this. I looked up and did some research. Huawei has spent like $70 billion in buying components in 2018. $11 billion of that went to American-based companies. We're talking about American-based companies like Qualcomm and Intel and etc. And while they've already found an alternative for components and hardware, their major challenge is going to be software. For instance, even if they are still operating on the Android operating system, Google snatching their services is a big challenge for them, because now You have no Gmail, you have no Google Photos, you have nothing that Google runs, including the number two search engine in the world, which is YouTube. And an even bigger channel, which is going to be try to overcome not being being able to have access to the Google Play Store, which is where a lot of the more high quality apps are found. And those of us on the consumer side, we've already shown a reluctance to want to adapt to getting apps from other places. Like, I mean, has anybody ever really used a Samsung app or an LG app, you know, or anything like that? Think about where do you download and use and get most of your apps from. They all come from, if you're a Samsung user, the Google Play Store, or if you're an Android user, the iTunes Store. If you're an Apple user, you can get it from the iTunes Store. So this is something that's going to really, really affect them in a large way. And this is going to be an immense hurdle for them, to say the least. And we're going to see exactly how they're going to come out on the other end of that. In other news coming from Capitol Hill, Roe versus Wade is now back being challenged for, I guess, like first time in quite some time. Yeah, actually not one, but three states that have some things that are looking to move to the Supreme Court floor that directly challenge abortion rights, and look to, and in the state of Alabama, as we all have heard, looking to eradicate abortion altogether. Let me see. You got Indianapolis, Louisiana, and Alabama. All three have certain provisions to Roe versus Wade, and are looking to try and challenge an age-old law that's been in effect since 1973. Now, from what I've been reading here in the New York Times, and they were saying that while Alabama has been taking the largest hit because of the fact that they have been the ones that have made the most drastic, want the most drastic provision to Roe versus Wade. They want to basically end all abortions, you know. They've been getting the most attention. They were saying that, from what I've been reading, that the Indianapolis law was probably going to be one of the ones that's going to be just pushed off and not being taken to the Supreme Court floor, because, you know, the Supreme Court owns their, you know, they have control of their docket, so they can just delay looking at this thing for years and years and years until it finally just, I guess, fizzles out. But much more of a challenge will be at Indiana, who's looking to challenge issues like the disposal of fetal remains and adding an 18-hour waiting period after state-mandated ultrasound examinations. So they're saying that basically the Supreme Court will most likely hear things that have to do with, you know, smaller, I guess, chips at the law, and not necessarily be looking to hear from Alabama for quite some time. Louisiana's also in the news about this whole abortion thing. Supreme Court is going to be hearing in the coming months a challenge to Louisiana law that could reduce the number of abortion clinics in the state to only one. So there's some states out there that are looking to just try and challenge the law on a micro level, and then you got Alabama being Alabama, and they just want to eradicate the damn law altogether. So I'm not gonna take this time out to get into where I stand on abortion. Just giving you guys the real, and then you know what's going on with that. Also on on Capitol Hill, remember the $20 bill, Harriet Tubman being put on the $20 bill? Well, you can look for that to be shelved. They were supposed to be coming out with the $20 bill next year, as a matter of fact. But due to security issues, in air quotes, they are now shelving the $20 bill until the end of the Donald Trump administration, which will be around about the year 2028, is what they said is when this bill will now come out, which I think is a shame. I think this would have been a great part of history, something that we could have, you know, we as people of color could have took some great pride in. And it looks like it's going to just be delayed a little bit more. However, I say this. Don't allow the delayance of this bill to let it grow stagnant. You know, like let's stay on Capitol Hill about this, and let's make sure that, you know, we see this thing to fruition, because something like this needs to happen. It would be great to see a person of color on our currency, since, you know, our currency is largely made by those of us who work at the lowest of levels, you know, the entry levels of, you know, from picking cotton to those of us who are bussers and kitchen workers and construction workers. Our country was built off the backs of people of color, and it's far time that is represented in our currency. Speaking of picking cotton, and moving on from the Harriet Tubman, but kind of staying with the Harriet Tubman, they found the Clotilda. The Clotilda is the last African slave ship to bring slaves to America. It was found right outside of Africatown, and officially claimed that this was the Clotilda. This just happened this month, so this month's been a pretty busy week for the United States on race relations. I came across the information through a short film from National Geographic. If you have a chance to check it out, man, check it out. It's a little short film, a short movie. About 10 minutes long, that speaks of Africatown and what's been going on with Africatown since its development. It's went through a bit of I guess you could call gentrification. They redo Africatown. Let's back up. Africatown was a settlement that was started by the last descendants from the descendants from the last African slave ship to reach the Americas. They started a town that had its own schools, had its own businesses, had its own dry cleaners, you know, barbershops and all that, as a means of trying to keep their heritage alive. And the United States and, well, the government, I won't even say the United States, we'll just say government officials decided that they wanted to industrialize parts of Africatown, and there was a great deal of them that didn't want to sell. And so as a result, you know, what ends up happening with this gentrification thing is they just stop investing money into your infrastructure, you know, your streets and things of that nature, and try and, I guess, force you to move out, you know, before taking it over via eminent domain. So that's what's happened to the settlement of Africatown. Now it's just a desolate, you know, dilapidated mess, and they're hoping that them finding the Clotilda and actually it being exhumed, I'm assuming they're going to try and exhume it, you know, and name it for the town for a historical landmark, which would inject some much needed dollars into that community. So if you have a chance, man, go check out that short film. You can find it on YouTube under the National Geographic. I found it under Trending, which is where I found a lot of the topics of the things that I was planning on talking about for today. So I'm going to take a little bit of a break and go give me a little bit of a drink, and we're gonna come back in, and we'll be talking about some more things that are a little closer to home, and look at why Kev on Stage is in love with Houston, or so they say. Be right back. Oh man, we're back. So jumping right back on into it, man, because I've been waiting on this hot button topic. Black Twitter and the black internet is not letting Steve Harvey off the hook for getting fired from 2 jobs this damn week. This boy here done lost more jobs than shit. I don't know. I ain't even got nothing for it, man. But Steve Harvey has just, we just found out that Steve Harvey has lost his show, his daytime talk show, Steve. Steve Harvey's daytime talk show has been running, 7 seasons? And just January was picked up for an extension. And what we find out is he's now being canned. And I believe Kelly Clarkson is going to be looking to replace. They're looking to replace him with a show about Kelly Clarkson. We'll see how that works out. But also, he's lost his hosting gig on the show Little Bigs, which is his kids' talent show that kind of, you know, I didn't really think it was all that great, to be honest with you. So I don't care what happens with the damn show. He's being replaced on that show by Melissa McCarthy, and that's got Twitter all ablaze, and Black Twitter in particular. So if you know what's been going on with Steve Harvey over the past few months, you know why Black Twitter is up in arms. he brought Monique on his show, Monique being the black female comedian that was asking for a boycott last year of Netflix because of her displeasure with the offer that Netflix offered for her doing a comedy special. If you saw over the past 2 years, Netflix has put a lot of money in into comedy specials. You know, with Dave Chappelle doing 3, Kevin Hart doing a couple, and Amy Schumer also getting in on it. And I think they paid Amy Schumer like $20 million, and so. Monique was offended by her largely much smaller offer of $500,000. And so she made it a point that she would be vocal about it, and she got out there and said, hey, we should boycott Netflix, which that boycott didn't get very much ground. So we ended up moving past that, but she also ended up getting in a bit of hot water with Lee Daniels and Oprah as well. And so at this point, Steve Harvey comes in and tries to play Big Brother and brings her down, sits her down on the couch and talks to her about what's going on with Hollywood and how as a black woman, she has alienated herself, and he and other people want to help her but cannot help her because of the way she, you know, she went about doing things. And, you know, this is the money game, and you can't do things that way if you want to play the money game. So when he lost 2 damn jobs this week, Black Twitter just started ripping him a new asshole. But I err on the side of saying that what happened with Monique and what happened with Steve Harvey are nowhere near the same. And I really kind of think that we should not necessarily just look to rake, you know, Steve Harvey over the coals for what happened with him and say, oh, well, look at what you, you know, because of what you said to Monique, that's what ended up happening with you. What Monique did was Monique asked about a boycott because she wasn't happy with an offer that was given to her. And she's well within her rights to do that, you know. What happened with Steve Harvey, however, was a totally different thing. Steve Harvey had been on that show for 7 years. It was the number four show in daytime, probably behind Ellen and, I don't know, like The View and whatever else you can think it is. But, I mean, it was a wildly popular show. I mean, I would watch it, and I'm not the biggest Steve Harvey fan. I didn't really think his stand-ups were all that great, but, I mean, he is funny. He is charismatic, you know, and I thought his show was pretty good, and it was good for black television. So what he did was he doubled down on it, and in the contract negotiations, he negotiated for a larger ownership stake in his show, changed the show name from the Steve Harvey Show to Steve, and asked for more creative control. NBC Universal, being the parent company that they are, they didn't like that he got more ownership stake in the show, and thus decided that they wanted to cancel the show altogether and bring in Melissa McCarthy. Go in a different direction, and I believe Kelly Clarkson's show is set to air at the same time slot that the Steve Harvey Show used to be on. So it used to be in. So that's got him kind of, you know, a little bit upset. I could see why. But for Black Twitter to be as upset as they have been and saying, oh, well, you know, I guess you kind of get what you deserve. I really can't really follow with that. But, you know, that's that. And that's how, you know, Black Twitter can be, man. Black Twitter can be brutal. Keep with comedians, man. My homeboy Sam Damaris, man, is a local Houston comedian that I think he's staying out there in Hollywood right now, but he's out, you know, he's still H-Town as fuck. So I was checking out his feed, and coincidentally, he posted something on Twitter about one of on Facebook, a tweet from one of the hottest social media comedians out right now, Kev On Stage. Kev On Stage just posted a couple of days ago. He's saying, I wish I loved something as much as people from Houston love being from Houston. And, you know, Sam was like, it's a shame. He'll never know what it's like. But y'all, if you're listening and you're not from Houston or you haven't been to Houston, to know Houston and to know Texas is to love Houston and to love Texas. It's a great thing, and I don't give a damn what nobody say, man. You know, I'll fight you about it. You know what I'm saying? If you're saying that Houston ain't great, you know, it's great weather all the time. We love our gun laws. We love our beer. We love our women. We love our food, and we love our sports. Oh, man. Houston has a love-hate relationship with our sports teams. And mine in particular has reached a bit of a climax with these goddamn Houston Rockets. So that's on the other side of this next break coming up. We'll talk a bit about what's going on with the Houston sports scene and why I can't stand the Houston Rockets, but I'm still going to be a Houston Rockets fan for life. And but shout out to Kev On Stage for putting Houston, giving a bit of love to Houston. And shout out to Sam Damaris, man. If you ever have a chance to go see the Whiskey Brothers, go check them boys out, man. I met Sam Damaris when I worked his his comedy special that he did for the House of Blues a few years back, and we end up bumping into each other at a bar a couple of weeks after that, and found out that we actually knew each other, you know. So if you ever have a chance to check out the Whiskey Brothers or a Sam Damaris show, or just hell, you can see Sam Damaris in a bar, run up to him, buy him a shot of damn whiskey, and just listen to his ass rant on, man. His ass is fucking funny. So, one last time, giving a shout out to Sam, and we're going to take a little bit of a break, and we'll be back, and we'll just wrap this whole segment up with what's going on with Houston, and how I think I found me a new home bar to be able to watch the likes of the Houston Rockets, Houston Astros, and that hell of a knockout from Deontay Wilder. We'll be back. All right, well, in sports news, the Rockets are out of the playoffs yet again. They were beat by the Golden State Warriors. And yeah, that's all I have to say about that. I ain't talking about them niggas, man. The Houston Astros kicking ass, man. They do what they do. The Astros are back in first place in the wins column. They are technically in second. Well, they're in second place if you look at it from percentage-wise at the time of this recording. Only the Minnesota Twins have a better win percentage than them, largely because of the fact that they've played one less game. But in the wins column, the Astros are in first place. They also have a plus 94 run differential, which is like head and shoulders above anybody else in the MLB right now. They kicking ass and taking names. They got what is arguably the best outfield in baseball right now. Jake Mariznick in last night's game where we lost to the Chicago White Sox 9-4 makes a hell of a double play from center field. He's backing up, catches it at the wall, and throws a pea of a dart to tag out White, who's playing for the Chicago White Sox, as he was trying to leg out what looked like advancing two bases. They ended up having to tag up because of the fact that Jake ended up catching his ball and makes a hell of a double play I haven't seen in God knows how damn long. That was like some old Bo Jackson-ass shit there. And also, in last night's game, they extended their 19-game, their home run streak to 19 straight games, which is tied for the most in Astros history. So let's hope that they can set another record with getting a home run over the next game. That'd be pretty dope. Good seeing the Astros being back to the Astros. Oh, they're looking pretty special this year, and I can't wait to see how it's going to shape up, you know, when it gets towards September and October, and hopefully they can keep this momentum going. Don't really have much in the way of sports going on right now. I mean, the Astros are killing it, and we'll talk a little bit more about them. I just want to touch bases on that a little bit. But this boy Deontay Wilder, though, did anybody see that fucking fight or scrum or whatever you want to call it? Because it wasn't really much of a fight. Deontay Wilder knocked this dude Brazil out in the first round at the 50 something seconds left in the fight. Dominic Brazil, who coincidentally his nickname is Trouble. And that was a nickname that I used to go by when I was younger and in the hood and doing all them old trap things that a trap nigga do. Trouble met his match, man. And I used to say this thing when people would meet me. They would say, you know, why do they call you Trouble? Because it's easy to get into and hard to get out of. This boy, Dominic Brazil, got into a damn match that was easy to get into. And that he got his ass knocked smooth on out of that hoe, too. Oh, man. Deontay Wilder tried to punch through this boy's face and find his soul. And I think he may have touched a bit of it. This boy hit this nigga with a 1-2 that was so damn vicious that I watched just the knockout blow, I don't know, at least about 100 times to figure out whether it was the left hand or the right hand that was actually the blow that fucking fucked this boy up so bad. But Jesus Christ, whatever it was, the thud from that right hand and him hitting the floor was something like I have never seen before. And good thing too, because the boxing world could use another heavyweight, man. We haven't seen a heavyweight this exciting since Mike Tyson. And for somebody who grew up, who actually got to see Mike, you know, the likes of Mike Tyson, George Foreman, Evander Holyfield, and things of that nature in the heavyweight class, that's what made me a boxing fan. While I enjoy the Floyd Mayweather style of fighting, I don't give a damn what y'all say, I enjoy it. You know, it is still good to see the likes of somebody so electrifying as Deontay Wilder in the ring right now. So, shout out to that boy there. And, I mean, when you talk about wanting to kill somebody and kill their kids and shit like that, man, you got to expect that somebody going to be coming for you. And, Dominic Brazil, you better learn how to keep your mouth shut next time, man. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself missing some motherfuckers. So, that's going to do it for a little bit of our sports segment. I'm going to take one last break and go over some two bars that I've been looking at to try and find a new home bar for me to be able to watch the likes of a Deontay Wilder knockout or these Astros kicking ass. And give you my reason why the one that's right here walking distance from my house won't be the one that I'll be naming my own bar. We'll be back. Well, there goes another ambulance passing by on good old Westheimer. That's about the third one I've seen in the last, shit. Well, since I've been recording this particular podcast. Speaking of Westheimer, it's where I live, it's where I stayed, it's where I worked, it's where I play. So I've been, since I'm out here on the West now, and that's probably where I'm going to be making my home for the next at least year or two, I've been trying to find a new spot to call home as far as my home bar. 1820 used to be my home bar. I would travel from wherever I was at all the way into downtown Houston. And that became my home bar for a while. Then it shifted over to Komodo's. And those of you who know me personally know what the hell happened with that and Komodo's and the people that own that bar. But I've been out here on the search trying to find me just a little nice little watering hole that I can go to watch the game, you know, grab a bite to eat or something like that when I get off of work, you know. And there's one directly right there at the light, which is next to my apartment complex, called Nick's Place. It's a pizzeria slash bar that kind of reminds me of what Cheers would be if Cheers was like some dark and American Horror Story style movie. I don't know, man. It's real dark, dank, and, you know, got a crap ton of TVs, and you can tell that whomever Nick is, I haven't met him yet, but I think he's been there since I've been there. You can tell that he gambles, or he has a lot of friends that gamble, because that's pretty much all it's there for. It's like, you know, it's got these dark and dusty-ass green chairs all over the damn place, and and a bunch of TVs. So, you know, you can watch whatever it is that you want to watch as far as sports goes. But it really doesn't have very much in the way of ambiance or anything else, for that matter. I went there and had a couple of rounds of beers and a couple of shots one night. And one of their sampler platters, which looked like they bought all the stuff off the sampler platter from the dollar store that's right there next door to it. But spent like $92 between me and one other person. And I was like, man, hell nah, I ain't going back here. And then not to mention the food wasn't good at all. But it's right next door. And so when I don't feel like going anywhere else, I'm pretty sure I'll be going there, you know, just to have a beer or something like that every now and then. But it ain't been nothing to write home about. Now, on the other hand, this past Tuesday, I went to Craft Republic. Craft Republic is further down, just past the Beltway, on Westheimer. And I instantly fell in love with this place. This place screams Sea Griggs. And it's got a real large wraparound patio. And the patio was nice and buzzing because, you know, it's Houston. And we got 8 months of good patio weather. So when I pull up in the lift, me and my two co-workers, we jump out, and it's about a good 30 to 50 people on the patio and another good 20 at least on the inside. And this is 12:30, 12:45, you know, at night. We end up taking a seat out there on the patio, but walked inside to go get a beer, and was met by a most pleasant bartender, by the name of Josiah. I'll never forget. And the dude was, you know, was dope. He was the consummate, you know, host, trying to talk one of my coworkers through selecting a beer and stuff like that, because she's, you know, more of a wine drinker and starting to get over into the land of beer. Speaking of beer, if you go by Craft Republic on Tuesdays, they have $2 domestics and $3 imports, and that's what brought me there, and that's what's gonna bring me back. That looks like that's gonna be my Tuesday night hangout, because hell, we were now in contrast to Nick's place, the three of us went to Craft Republic, had two to three beers apiece, and I ordered their chicken bacon ranch pizza, and our tab was $29.75. I go over here to Nick's place. It was just me and one other person. We had like two rounds of shots and a couple of beers. And their appetizer plate, which was like $18, but it only had like mac and cheese bites, cheese sticks, and all other shit that you could find in a freezer at a dollar store. And my tab was $92. I'll say this. Ain't no way in hell I'll be looking to go back over there and claim that to be my home bar. Craft Republic, as it stands right now, you look like you're gonna be it. The ambiance was nice. They got like six to eight pool tables as soon as you walk in. They got beer pong on the inside and outside. Just a lot of shit going on, and it's a big open space with a hell of a good beer selection. So That's gonna be my little hangout spot. And I found out that they also show the UFC and the pay-per-view fight. So you'll be finding me there quite frequently. That's gonna do it for this episode of The Rogue Radio. Thank you for sitting through season 2, episode 1. And I enjoyed bringing it to you guys, and I look forward to bringing this to you guys. Every Thursday is when we'll be looking to drop these episodes. As always, man, like I say, make sure that you be bold, be someone, be vigilant, be smart, be the resistance. I'ma be out.